want to step back just for a moment to review where we started the next sugya. But I want to sort of step back just to review where we what we did so far, and then to see how that sort of moves into the next step. We were on Daf Mem Ches Amud Beis, and the Mishnah had said the following. The Mishnah said that you're allowed to plant vegetables under an Asherah tree during the winter season, during the rainy season, because you don't benefit from the shade of the tree. So if I plant, and the if anything, you might be losing from the shade of the tree.
Doesn't the growth period extend into the warmer, into the summer? It would seem that the initial planting.
So I don't. No, I understand what you're saying.
So what does it mean? Just the initial planting can't have...
No, I assume it means that these are things that grew on shorter seasons. Remember, the climate was generally warmer, so it may have been that... you're correct that the grain... So the major crops certainly were planted in the fall, right before the rainy season, and then are harvested in the early to late spring, typically. But it may have been the vegetables were things that sort of grew it, you know, year-round. So, the Mishnah says that you can have, you can have stuff planted underneath the trees during the rainy season, but not during the hot season. During the hot season, your vegetables are going to benefit from the fact that the tree will provide cooling, will provide shade, and so the vegetables won't dry out. But during the rainy season, that's not a benefit. If anything, it's a detriment, as the Gemara will point out. So that's what the Tana Kama had said. The only thing he says is that lettuce, chazirin, you can't plant at all because apparently it's always the shade is always beneficial. Okay, fine. Rabbi Yose says this is one mem chesam et beis. Rabbi Yose disagreed and he said no. He said you're not even allowed to plant regular vegetables during the rainy season. Why? Because you're right. You don't get benefit from the shade of the tree, but the leaves fall off the tree, the leaves decompose and become fertilizer, and therefore you're benefiting from that, from the Asherah tree. That was Rabbi Yose's argument. So the Gemara, which we read last time, immediately pants and says, hold on, this doesn't make sense. Presumably they're not arguing about the realia, about the mitziut, right? In other words, everybody agrees, the shade is not beneficial, but the decomposing leaves, the leaves do fall down, they do decompose, they do provide fertilizer for the ground. So Rabbi Yose is saying that even though, Rabbi Yose is saying that that is sufficient to be a problem, and the Chachamim say that's not a problem. But earlier in the Perek, the Gemara points out, we had a debate, what do you do with Avodah Zarah? So Rabbi Yose said you can grind it up into a powder and scatter it to the wind. And the Chachamim said, no, you can't do that. You know why? Because the stuff that you grind up into a powder and you scatter to the wind falls on the ground, and it becomes fertilizer, right? Now, the way the Gemara, that's what the Mishnayos say. They don't explain the exact logic, but the Gemara, as it often does, fits this sort of into a conceptual framework of what's known as Zev Zeh Gorim, that when you have a process that happens, and it is accomplished by, let's say, two assistants, two catalysts, and one of the catalysts is mutter, is permissible, and one of them is prohibited. So the question is the byproduct mutter? Is the byproduct permissible to consume? So one of the examples the Gemara will have on the next Amud, I don't know if I mentioned this last time, is let's say I am making bread. So in order to make bread, I have water and flour, that's very nice, but if I have just water and flour and I leave it there, I'll be looking at a dough for a very long time. If I want matzah, that's very nice. But I want bread. I want it to taste like bread. So what do? I put yeast in. So their yeast was sourdough. And supposing I took yeast, I need, let's say, I don't know, a certain amount of yeast to make the dough rise. And I take a piece of yeast, half of which is regular yeast, and the other half is truma. In other words, it was sourdough of truma. Cohen had flour and water. He left it out for months or whatever, just however long it takes, and turns it to sourdough. So now I take a piece of sourdough from the truma, a piece of regular sourdough, and I put them together, and I put them in my dough, and the dough rises. Now, if I used only sourdough of truma, then only a Kohen can eat this, right? We say that the sourdough, even though it's less than a 60th, you may not be able to taste the sourdough itself because it transforms the dough into bread. Just exact same thing with rennet, right? You can't taste the rennet in the cheese, but if rennet was not kosher and it was used to make cheese, you can't eat the cheese, even though it should be batel, because it gives shape. It's davar maimed. It's like it's still there. But in this case, instead of using all sourdough of truma, which would mean only a Kohen could eat the bread, I use half of truma, half of regular chulin, which anybody can eat. And the question is, what is the status of the bread now? So this is what we call zeviz egorim. We have a catalyst, the yeast, which transforms the dough into bread. And part of it was iser, not a Kohen's allowed to eat it, but a non-Kohen is not allowed to eat it. So I'm a zar, I can't eat it. And part of it was heter. Part of it was something that was permissible. And the question is, how do you look at the byproduct? Zev is egorim. Is it mutter or is it aser? So the Gemara posits here that the debate in both places, the first Mishnah, where Rabbi Yose is the lenient one, and this Mishnah, where he appears to be the stringent one, is predicated upon this question of zev is egorim. So for example, to go back to the first Mishnah, I take the avodah zarah, I grind it up, I distribute it as a powder. Even if I put it directly into my garden, so I put it there. Now, why did my tomatoes grow? They grow, A, because the natural nitrogen that's found in the ground itself, plus the additional fertilizer from the ground up avodah zarah. Rabbi Yose seems to think it's not a problem. The Chachamim say, no, you can't do that with your avodah zarah, grind it up, because af hu naseh zevel, right? In other words, it turns into fertilizer, and therefore the only way to get rid of your avodah zarah is to throw it into the Yam HaMelech or something like that. Some other solution. So it would appear in the first Mishnah that Rabbi Yose believes that zev is egorim is motor, and the Chachamim believe that zev is egorim is prohibited. But you come to our Mishnah, and what do you have? Well, you plant vegetables underneath the tree, not underneath the tree, in the shade of the tree. Now, in the winter season, in the rainy season, so you don't really benefit from the shade, and fine, but you do benefit from the fertilization. But the Chachamim apparently assume it's not a problem. Why not? Presumably because the ground also has its own fertilizer. It's not being fertilized only from the leaves that fall off the Asherah tree. It's being fertilized from a lot of different sources. And that's called zeviz egorim, and therefore it's permitted. And Rabbi Yose says that no, that the leaves fall off, and it becomes zevel, and therefore Rabbi Yose says, it sounds like Rabbi Yose says in the Mishnah, it's usher to plant the vegetables, even in the rainy season, in the shade of an Asherah tree, because the leaves are going to fall off and fertilize it. Well, so that's what the Gemara's problem is. The Gemara's problem is that they've essentially flipped positions. In the Mishnah of grinding up avodah zarah, Rabbi Yose says, no problem, Chacham say, no good. Here, in terms of the leaves falling off the Asherah tree, the Chacham say, no problem, as long as you're planting it in the season with the shade doesn't benefit the growth, not a problem. So that's why we read this, but now let's read one more time. Then starting with the Gemara, right after the second Mishnah on Memtes, about 6-7 lines before the lines get wide in the Gemara. L'meimra, based upon our Mishnah, does this imply the Rabbi Yose Savar Zev Zegorem Oser? Our Mishnah seems to imply Rabbi Yose believes that when you have two assistants, two catalysts, it's Oser. But Rabbanan Amri, Zev Zegorem is Mutter. And that's why the Chachamim say it's okay to plant the vegetables in the shade of the Asherah tree during the rainy season. Now, what's that? So here's, before we go further, I want to mention a very important comment that the Ritva has here. I could have sort of glossed over it, but when you step back and sort of think about it, it's sort of obvious. The Ritva says, one second, what is the Mishnah discussing here? We say that Rabbi Yose holds Zev Zegorim is Aser. But that's not actually true if you read the Mishnah on the surface. Zev Zegorim being prohibited refers to, there are two possibilities. It either refers to doing it, or it refers to the end product. Now, we usually assume, actually, that the debate about Zev Zegorim is not about what you're allowed to do, but it's about if something happened already, what is the status of the end product? Nobody assumes, if you have something that is prohibited b'hana, nobody assumes that you can take that. I have a brilliant solution. I have, let's say, some orla juice. Orla is the something, first 3 years of the fruit of the tree, you can't eat, first 3 years after planting. I have some orla juice, and I use these juice as a catalyst. I can't use the orla juice as a catalyst because it's aser b'hana, and if it transforms, you know, let's say it's turned acidic. So you can use that as rennet. You know, and various kinds of acids can be used as rennet. So I'm going to take the juice from this arla fruit, and I want to use it as a catalyst, but I can't because I won't be able to eat the cheese. So you know what I'm going to do? To save myself money, instead of using 3 ounces, I need, let's say, 10 ounces of kosher rennet to make the cheese, I'll use 5 ounces of kosher rennet and 5 ounces of the arla rennet, and it's no problem because zev zegorim is mutar. So that's ridiculous. The Ritva says, if that's the case, we've found a way to use all the Isurei Hana of the Torah. I'll never use them outright. I'll just use them where there's not enough of them to work. In fact, I would argue, if 9 ounces of rennet is not enough, of this acid, of this vinegar, is not enough to transform the cheese, I could use 9 ounces of Orla and 1 ounce of kosher. That's enough. That's called Zevizegorin. So that's ridiculous. So the Ritva, so the fact that Rabbi Yossi says, you're not allowed to plant here because the leaves fall off the tree and they're going to fertilize, that doesn't mean he holds that zev zegorim is asur. Everybody should agree that it is prohibited in the first place to do that, number one. Number two, now once you realize that that's a question, how can you say that the Chachamim's position is that zev zegorim is mutter? Even if the Chachamim in our Mishnah believe that the dual catalyst is permitted, that means after the fact, that doesn't mean you're allowed to set it up that way. So how can the Chachamim say, the Mishnah says, zorim tachteha, that implies lichatchila, ipso facto, you may plant the stuff underneath the tree. So how can you, that doesn't mean, that's worse than zev zegorim is mutter. That's like, I can use Isurei Hana. So the Ritva here, to do away with the question, says that there are two different categories of zev zegorim. When I am actively engaged in using that which is asur b'hana, I am benefiting in effect from it now. The Ritva says everybody agrees you're not allowed to do it, and the only debate is what happens post facto. If, however, you're dealing with a situation like this, what benefit do you get when you plant the vegetables? The answer is nothing right now. Any benefit you get from the tree is going to be passive. Right? When the leaves fall off later on their own and they fall onto your thing and they decompose and they fertilize it. So the Ritva says in a situation where you're not actually using, you're not actively using it, then Zev Zegorim Mutter and Zev Zegorim Aser relates to doing it in the first place. In other words, I presume if Rabbi Yose in fact indeed does hold Zev Zegorim is Aser here, he might even hold that if you planted it and it grew, it's also Aser. If that were Yosef's position. But if you hold that Zev Zegorim is mutter, it means in this case, not only post facto, but even in advance, you're actually allowed to do it that way because you're not actually benefiting from the leaves right now. There aren't any leaves falling right now. So therefore, the Ritva claims that sort of how we apply Zev Zegorim changes in our context.
Is the action that you do, like the leaves, they just fall by themselves.
Right.
As compared to, you know,
grinding
up a... So is the action that you do that makes a difference?
I have to go back and look at his language, but yes, that's what it certainly sounds like. One second. Yeah. No, I think actually his language is, I think he talks about that there's no Hana right now. I don't think it's the action.
There's no immediate Hana.
Right, I think it's a timing issue. Now, the truth is, normally when you do an action, you're benefiting right now also. But sometimes when you're passive, I would argue the shade, when you plant in the shade in the sunny season, you might say you're benefiting right then. But the leaves falling off the tree, that's a benefit that's going to come later. That's what I would assume.
So Zegorim is always a bidyeva right?
Right, unless you're not actually benefiting now. But normally, in most cases, Zev Zegorim, the debate is only post facto. But l'chatchila, everybody agrees you're not allowed to do it.
Right. So the case of the dough, the bread, okay. So when you use the yeast, right, that's partially truma.
Right.
So you're benefiting now, aren't you?
Yes, that happens to be an odd case, it's tricky to transpose to our situation for one simple reason. There's no prohibition of using the truma yeast. It's just that a non-kohen won't be able to eat it. Right, so that's almost a more interesting case because a kohen certainly could do l'chatchila. It's going to restrict him in how he eats the dough. And if the kohen had instead taken some chulin sourdough, so then he wouldn't have any restrictions.
But right now it's dough.
No, I understand. But the point is, there's no, even for me as a non-kohen, there's no isur. In other words, Isurei Hana, I can't use now. Let's say if this were the Orla case of the rennet is a better case. Right, because there, it's Aser, there's no Iser Hana from Truma, but there is an Aser from Arla. So we would say, it is Aser for anybody to make the cheese that way. Now, if someone went ahead and did it, and now I come along and say, can I eat that cheese? So that depends upon the question of whether Zeva Zagarim is Motar Asur. Okay, so now, but now the Gemara has, so let's accept the fact that in our cases, even though, you know, everybody agrees, you're not allowed l'chatchila at the outset to try to engage and get benefit on the basis of Zeva Zagarim, but in this case, because you're not benefiting at the time you're doing anything, it's a benefit that comes later, so people agree there's no distinction between before the fact and after the fact.
But not, okay. So, but not so in that first Mishnah, when you're grinding up the Avodah Zarah. There you're getting an immediate benefit, well, from your own action. Why is there even an opinion in that earlier Mishnah that that action is permitted? The Ritva's point is well taken.
Okay, so let's hold off. I think that your question is an excellent question. I could try to fumble for an answer to it somehow, but I think that once we look at the Gemara sort of actually answers that question. Your question is on Rabbi Yosei. All right, so the Gemara effectively is going to answer your question. And that would do away, and the Ritva doesn't, one would then not have to get into it. So the Gemara said, the Gemara quotes the Mishnah, we saw the reverse on the third line after the Mishnah, Ditznan, Rabbi Yosei Omer Shochik Vizora Leruach Omati Layam, Omru Lo, Afi Nase Zevel Venemar, Lo Yidbach Biyad Chaba Umanachem. So the Gemara concludes this opening section by stating, Kasha the Rabbanan ad the Rabbanan. There's a question, an internal contradiction between the Rabbanan's position and Kasha the Rabbi Yosei ad the Rabbi Yosei. And Rabbi Yosei also contradicts himself. Now, as a method of methodology, you should always realize that the contradiction between the Rabbanan and the Rabbanan is not truly a contradiction, because they don't have to be the same Rabbanan. Right? In other words, Rabbi Yosei argues with the Chachamim in one Mishnah, it could be different Chachamim than he argues with a different Mishnah. Okay? Whereas Rabbi Yosei contradicting Rabbi Yosei is a problem. This is Rabbi Yosei, there's no... Now, there are multiple Rabbi Yoseis who exist in Tannaic literature, but the Rabbi Yosei in the Mishnah, when there's no father's name there, is probably the most preeminent of all the Tannaim, Rabbi Yosei Bar Chalafta. Occasionally in the Gemara, you'll see a brisa where Rabbi Yosei says, Abba Chalafta Omer. Abba Chalafta wasn't the name of a Tana. Abba Chalafta means, the word Abba, by the way, I don't know how many of the men go by the term Abba, but you know what the word Abba means? It doesn't actually mean father, it means my father. In other words, my father. That's what Abba means. It doesn't just mean father, it actually means, because Abba, the Aleph at the end in Aramaic means the. It's like a hey, it's like Abba in Aramaic, literally is ha'av, right, in Hebrew. So if someone were to say ha'av, the father, he means my father. Same thing with ima, it's the same thing. So Rabbi Yosei is Rabbi Yosei Bar Chalafta. He's the only Tana about whom the Gemara says, you paskin like him even when he argues on multiple people. Rebbe and Rabbi Akiva, we say halacha ke Rebbe and Rabbi Akiva mechave ro, one-on-one, but lo mechave rav. And Rabbi Yosei is afila mechave rav. We don't always paskin like Rabbi Yosei, but it does tell you something about his stature. So Rabbi Yosei, the Stam Rabbi Yosei, and the Mishnah Rabbi Yosei Bar Chalafta, so no way getting around that. So the Gemara now says the following on the last narrow line. Bishloma de Rabbi Yosei ad de Rabbi Yosei lo kasha. There's no contradiction. You can resolve the contradiction. Hosam de ka'ozil li'ibud matir. Hocha de lo ka'ozil li'ibud asur. So this is a very, very difficult line. But whatever the line means exactly, the Gemara's argument essentially is that the two cases are fundamentally different. The way Tosus reads, which I think is a better reading, they go after Rashi on this, is that in this case you actually benefit, in that case you don't actually benefit. In other words, Rabbi Yosei would say there's no real benefit there. Okay, we'll read Tosus in a moment. Rashi has a very, very, totally different interpretation. Rashi, if you take a look on the fourth line in Rashi's in the Gemara, it's five lines before the Rashi lines get wide. The Dibur Maschil is Hasam Ka'azil Li'ibud. So Rashi says there, talking about the guy who's grinding up the Avodah Zarah, li'abdo hu miskaven. His intent is to destroy it. Ukvar bitla avodas kochavim. The avodas kochavim, the avodas shem avodas zarah, is already batel. It's already nullified, meaning it's not avodas zarah anymore. V'logara me'avodas kochavim shenishtaber me'la. It's no less than avodas zarah which broke on its own. Now, this is a while back, but when we learned the beginning of the Perek, so there was a machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, about an avodah zarah that breaks on its own, right? Let's say the wind blows it over, it smashes. What is its status? So Rashi says, here when you grind up the Avodah Zarah, it's no worse than Avodah Zarah Sh'nishtabri Me'eleha, which Rashi is assuming it doesn't have a shame Avodah Zarah. Hilkach, Leka Zevezegonim, Sheharei Ain't Kan Isur Kolkach. Rashi says that once you're grinding up that Avodah Zarah, it's really not so usur to get Hanah from it straight out. Why? Now, he knows that not everybody agrees, but he says, Dafilu Rabbanan lo asri ela mishum gzera dilma magbale. Rashi says the only reason why the Chachamim prohibit in that case when the Yisrael grinds it up is we're afraid that the Yisrael might pick it up initially to acquire it and then decide to destroy it. Now, what's the problem when the Jew picks up the Avodah Zarah and acquires it first and then destroys it? Once the Jew acquires the Avodah Zarah, it becomes Avodah Zarah Shel Yisrael now, and there's no bittul, there's no nullification of a Jew's Avodah Zarah. So Rashi claims that really, one opinion would say it's mutar legamre. The other one, it says it's really only a gzeira midrabban unless you pick it up. And therefore, since you're destroying it there, the Avodah Zarah, it's not zevzeh gorim, because there's no iser. Both gormim, both causes, both catalysts are heter. Whereas in our Gemara, the leaves are not batel, and they really are fertilizing the thing. So that is a classic case of zevzeh gorim. So Tosus does it like this. Tosus writes, the fourth Tosus on the page, or the third from the bottom, smack in the middle, Hasam de ka'aza le'ibud. Perish ba'kuntris de la'abdom iskaven, ukvar betela, v'havde ka'ovdas chachavim shenishtabra me'eleha. That's a fair quotation of Rashi, at least as we have it. V'kasha batuva. There are a lot of problems with this, Tosus says. De lamanda amar avodas chachavim shenishtabra me'eleha asura, tikshe. Tosus says that, firstly, what do you do for Rabbi Yochanan, who holds that Avodah Zarah that breaks on its own is not Betela. Vafilu laman deshari nami, even according to the one who does permit, ha'ein mevata Yisrael avodas kolchavim shal oved kolchavim. Who cares why, even if the Jew didn't pick it up to acquire it, a Jew cannot be mevatel the Avodah Zarah of a guy. The Avodah Zarah of a guy has bittul, but only a guy can do it. If you remember, that was why David had Itai Hagiti in his army. That was, he was the chief Avodah Zarah mevateler. But a Jew can't do that. V'od debishe Yisrael nami ayri Rabbi Yose b'deraisi raya me'egel u'mimifletzeh shehisha Yisrael. Tosus points out when the Gemara of Yose in the earlier Gemara on that Mishnah tries to bring proof to a Shita, he's not only talking about Avodah Zarah of a guy. He quotes examples from Tanakh about destroying Avodah Zarah when they ground it up and scattered it, which was Avodah Zarah that belonged to Jews. And Tosus says, Avodah Zarah shel Yisrael, Avodah Zarah shel Yisrael, eina betela olamis. It's never betela. So that cannot be the distinction. It can't be that, again, Rashi understood that there it's Azla Le'ibud, here it's not. Rashi understood there's no Isser Hanav Avodah Zarah, here there is an Isser Hanav. Tosus says it doesn't work. There's also an Isser of Hanav Avodah Zarah there. It is a Goreim, there's a Goreim of Isser and a Goreim of Heter. So that cannot be what the Gemara is saying. So Tosus says, Lekach Nevi Lefarish, the Ka'azya Le'ibud. We know what that means? The Lo Shchiach Sheyavo Lezibul Bezriya LeRuach. She'ein Nofo Kolkach B'yachad. Rabbi Yose says, you're not going to get any benefit from it. If you were to get benefit, it would be a benefit of Isser. But you're scattering it to the wind. How much of this powder is going to fall on any one piece of your land that in any way you actually get Hana from the Avodah Zarah? It's non-existent. So therefore, Hasam Ka'azal Ibun means the Hana that you would get from the Zarah is destroyed. It's scattered, you get nothing out of it. Whereas here, the leaves fall on basically, you know, a narrow space on the ground. They decompose, and you get real benefit from the leaves. So Tosus, now once you say that, Lenny, that answers your question. Right? In other words, why does Rabbi Yose permit there? It's not that you're saying you're benefiting right then. You're fertilizing right at the time. The answer is you're not fertilizing. Okay. So that's what the Gemara said. Fine. Bishlama the Rabbi Yose, Lokasha Hasam Kazili Ibud Matir. Ha Hadalo Kazili Brasser. Fine. Ella the Rabbanon, ad the Rabbanon Kasha. What do you do with the Kasha and the Rabbanon? So the Gemara gives a classic answer, which it doesn't always like. Ipuch. Ipuch means flip it around. It means one of these two Mishnayis is backwards. In other words, you should state that, let's say in our Mishnah, or let's say in that Mishnah, flip around Rabbi Yose's opinion to the Chacham's opinion to Rabbi Yose. Obviously, somebody got confused. Right? Okay.
so flippantly, just no pun intended.
That's good pun.
No, really.
So the answer is
it's a Mishnah. I mean, this is supposed to be authoritative text.
So it is
if you did it today, you'd say conservative, you know.
So I will say that it is not infrequent when the Gemara suggests the resolution to a contradiction is that that either somebody got mixed up or there were two. It was a machlokas about who held what. And one Mishnah embodies the position of one, and one Mishnah embodies the position of the other. They amount to the same thing. But in this case, the Gemara doesn't explain why you should flip them around. Is it because somebody made a mistake? Because there were two traditions as to who held which.
Either the yeshiva. The world doesn't like textual emendations.
This is...
Right.
We're not as great as they are, you know.
That's
always a problem. So all I would say is the Gemara obviously does not prefer this as a first choice. And when the Gemara can provide another answer, it will. And as we're about to see, it's going to go down a very different path, which is going to take us a while to get there.
Rashi's medakteh to say kula mas nisa, not just their views, but the whole Mishnah.
Well, no, that's what he means. In other words,
the ibuch.
I don't know why Rashi comments that way. So I'll tell you what Rashi... I think why Rashi is stating that is that he wants to point out that once you flip the mission around, you don't have to give the answer that we gave for Rabbi Yose either.
Right. But
to the extent that you find that answer might have been... If you think that answer was a little bit forced, you don't have to force the answer anymore, because now we've... Right. Okay. And whenever you do epoch, you always do kula masnisa. I think he just wants to emphasize that for Rabbi Yose, it solves that problem as well. Okay, so now the Gemara says, "V'iboy yisema." But if you want, I can say, "Lo tepuch." No, don't flip it around. The Rabbi Yose, the problem with Rabbi Yose, kiddushanin, as we have already taught. In other words, the answer we gave for Rabbi Yose is the answer we're going to stick with. The Rabbanan is not a contradiction. Why? Kidamar Rav Mori. Now, before we read this, let's just think about what the Rabbanan's position was, because you want to know Rabbi Yose's position is. You tell me, is Rabbi Yose's position fundamentally that Zev is a Gorim is Usr or that Zev is a Gorim is Mutter? If you think about the Gemara's resolution, what would you say?
Mutter? No. The Usr.
Why?
It's Usr. Right, because he's talking about if you have, right, in the case of the leaves.
Right.
Let's say so, he's saying that's Usr.
And what about the case earlier?
The case earlier would also be usur, even though we originally thought it would be mutter, right?
But well, he says it's mutter.
There's no zevazeh there. There's no.
That's the point. It's not zevazeh gorin there, right? Okay. It's all heter there. So, in other words, Rabbi Yose fundamentally, according to the Gemara's resolution, whole zevazeh gorin is prohibited. Okay. Now, for the Rabbanan, so their position in the earlier Mishnah is that it looked like zevazeh gorin is prohibited, and in this Mishnah they seem not to care. So now we want to think about when the Gemara gives the answer, where do the Chachamim wind up? In other words, which is the outlier? Is the earlier Mishnah unusual for some reason that they prohibited, or is this Mishnah unusual and for some reason they permitted? So the Gemara says, Kida Amar Rav Mari Bered the Rav Kahana, Masha Mashpiach Be'or Pogem Be'basar, Hachinami, Masha Mashpiach Be'nevaya, Pogem Be'tzel. Now this is one of those cases where, as much as any of us, or some of us, think that we know a lot of Gemara, if it weren't for Rashi, we'd be totally lost. The Gemara here is assuming that you know a sugya in Meseches Tumura. Now, I once upon a time learned Tmura. I remember very little of it. But basically, the Gemara is trying to draw an analogy. It's all true, and there's no connection between the two sugyos. It's trying to draw an analogy between some other Gemara and apply the same logic here. And the Gemara, even if you don't know the other case, we can sort of tease out what it's doing. In that Gemara, it says that what you benefit in the hide, you lose in the flesh, in the meat. So to an our Gemara, what you benefit from the leaves, you lose through the shade. So the truth is, if I were sitting thinking slowly and carefully, which I rarely do, learning Gemara, I go a little too fast, I might have been able, without knowing actually what the analog was, I might still have been able to understand the Gemara. And if you think about it, the Gemara is saying as follows. What's the problem in our Mishnah? That you're getting benefit from the nevaya, from the leaves, from the decomposing leaves. But what you get, the benefit that you get from the decomposing leaves is offset by the shade, which in the rainy season keeps the sun totally off your vegetables, which isn't good for them. You'd rather have some sun then. So if I just translate that way, what does the Gemara seem to be saying?
It nets itself out.
And therefore, you're correct. And therefore?
No, therefore should be us, sir.
Because, I'm not saying you're wrong.
There is no benefit.
Thank you. There's no. What we're saying is in our Mishnah, there is no Hana'ah.
There's a double benefit. It's the opposite.
No.
Not only are you getting the nutritional value of falling leaves, but you are also exposing your vegetables to greater sunlight by virtue of them there being...
No. But the assumption is that there are enough leaves... In other words, there are leaves on the tree that are still blocking the sun in the rainy season. Right? So in other words, it's not that all the leaves fall, but there are leaves that are falling off on a regular basis. So the assumption is that the Chachamim permit planting in the shade of the... shade of the Asherah tree during the rainy season. They permit planting vegetables. Because when I ask you, do you get any hana from the Asherah tree? So we don't look at isolate things. We look at the net benefit. The net benefit is zero. Mashemashbiach b'nevaya. What you gain from the leaves falling off, your pogim b'tzel, you lose through the loss of sunlight. Therefore, it's a wash. And therefore, you're not getting hana. But in the earlier case, when you grind up the avodah zarah, it's just a net gain. Whatever benefit you get from the fertilizer of the stuff that you ground up. So the Chacham Rabbi, now, so what was the case? So truth is, you know, at this point, you don't really need to know what the Gemara and Torah is. You know, I'm not as careful as I should be, so of course I run to Rashi. So Rashi first tells you what the case of Temura is, and then Rashi explains to you what the case is here. So let me explain just briefly what the case was in Temura. The halacha is that if you have an animal that's a Baal Mum, it has a blemish in it, so obviously you cannot bring it as a korban on the Mizbeach. You can't bring it as a sacrifice. What do you do with the animal? So the answer is we redeem the animal.
It was dedicated, right?
I have to talk about just a little detail here. What is the status of the animal? So you redeem it, because it has sanctity. You were makdash it. You dedicated it to the Mikdash. The question is, what can I do with that animal now? So it actually depends. If the animal had a mum, when I dedicated it to Hekdash in the first place, then once I redeem it, it's like it never was dedicated. It has no internal kedusha as a karban, no residual kedusha, because when I sanctified it in the first place, it could not have become a karban. It wasn't suitable to be brought as a sacrifice. Effectively, what was I giving to Hekdesh when I sanctified it in the first place? Its monetary value. Now that I redeem it, I remove the kedusha. The kedusha goes on to the money that now belongs to the temple treasury, and now the animal is like just like it was before. I can do whatever I want with it. I can eat it any way I want. I can kill it any way I want. I can milk it. I can use it for work. I can shear it. Everything. If, however, I have an animal that is tamim, it has no blemish, and I dedicate it as a karban, as an ola, as a shlamim, as a chatas, as an asham, whatever it is, and now the animal gets a mum, a permanent mum. So now I can't bring it as a karban, so I redeem it. But because when I sanctified the animal, I dedicated it, it actually achieved what's called kedushas haguf, internal sanctity of its body, not just kedushas damim, not just this monetary value. When I redeem it, it still retains residual kedusha, which means what I always thought this is del Reisa, although I read something in this sugya, I don't know where, if Rashi or whatever they shown him, it sounds like it's only the Rabbanon. I cannot, if it's just like I cannot plow with an ox that belongs to Hekdesh, that's a karban, I cannot plow with this animal that I've redeemed because of its mum. Just like I can't shear a sheep. Lo savod b'chor shorecha, velo sagoz b'chor tzonecha. You can't work the animals, you can't shear them, you can't milk them. If it dies without shchita, you can't feed it to your dogs. It's aser b'ana. Right? V'ochal ta, velo l'klavecha. Any other animal that dies, you can feed to the animals. Not this, because it has residual kedusha saguf. The only way it may be eaten, benefited from, is by shechting and eating it. Anybody can eat it. We paskin, a tamei, the Torah says a tamei tahor. You don't have to be ritually pure. Even a non-Jew is allowed, you can share with him. But the only heter in it is achila. That's it. So, now, because of this residual kedusha also,
that's the heter from the pasuk.
What's that?
How do we know achila is mutar? Everything else is aser.
So they understand ra b'chala. No, well, that pasuk, the pshat in lo savod b'vchor sharech of lo sagoz b'chor tzanecha is talking about a tamim. We're going to read it. We read it the last day of Yom Tov. It's in Kol HaBachor, right? It's Lefnei Hashem El Kacha Tochlanu, right? B'makom Hashem Yivchar. It's brought as a karban. So Pshat in the Pasuk is only talking about the actual karban, you know, the animal that's a Bachor, that's brought as a karban. The Chinnish in Parshas Re'eh, a Parsha earlier in the first part of the Pasuk, both in Parshas Re'eh, the Chinnish in the first part is that it's the Parsha of what's known as Basar Taiva. It's the first time the Torah explicitly permits us to eat meat outside the context of a karban. carbon. In other words, it's a whole machlokas. It's a machlokas of Rekiva Rabbi Shmuel in the desert, were they allowed to shecht an animal of chulin? Or was it that the only way to eat meat in the desert was to bring it as a carbon? It's a machlokas. So in Parshas Re'eh, though, the Torah speaks about when we go to Eretz Yisrael and we're far away from the place that God is going to choose, from Yerushalayim. So it says, Rak b'chol avas nafshecha tizbach v'achal tavasar. So the Torah repeats itself in that section. Moshe Rabbeinu repeats himself. So Chazal understand that one of the two sections is talking about regular chulin, and the other one is talking about what's called shor psulei hamukdashim. An animal that was hekdesh, was a karban, and got a mum, and now you redeem it. And they darshan tizbach v'lo giza v'achal ta v'lo l'klavecha. Right? So in other words, you can slaughter it, can't shear, you can't work with it. V'achal ta, you may eat it, but not your dogs. Meaning, if it die, if you shecht it, you can technically, I think, feed it to your dogs. But if it dies, where the only thing you could do was feed it to your dogs, you can't use it. Because it still retains, it has a residual kedusha, so the Torah very much narrowly constrains the way it may be eaten. It's a very powerful, actually, Musar message about how we relate to eating of animals. Even when the animal is no longer a karban, the ideal way of eating meat seems to be with a certain type of framework, with a certain kind of kedusha. What comes out of that as well is the following. You're allowed to sell, you're allowed to sell the sharp suleha mukdashim. Meaning, if you buy the animal, you redeem the animal from Hekdesh, and you shecht it, you can sell parts of the animal to people. However, Chazal imposed limitations on the manner in which you can do some of the selling. In other words, they imposed restrictions because, you know, selling in certain ways in public and weighing it in certain ways is very, very, it's very chulindic. It's very, you know, chuldic. It's not respectful to the animal. You want to do it a little quietly. So the Gemara points out, though, that when you impose restrictions on selling it, so there are costs to that. What's the cost? It means the seller is going to get less money in the process, right? Which means what? That means that Hekdesh is going to get less money in the process. Now, once it comes to the Hefsed of Hekdesh, then we're more likely to permit. Now, let me finally, with that background, come to what the Gemara was talking about tomorrow. Gemara says that you're not allowed to be margilin. You're not allowed to flay the animal in a way, the way that you strip the hide, it comes off almost all in one piece. So it's considered somehow a little pastish. It's not so nice for the animal. So the Gemara says, yes, but there's going to be greater benefit from the hide, which means the animal's going to be worth more. It's hektesh's benefit. So the Gemara says, mashem mashbiach be'or poge mabasar. Apparently, when you flay it that way, the meat, I don't know if the meat goes off faster or something like that, you lose value in the meat. And therefore, the net gain to hektesh is going to be zero, and therefore we don't allow you to flay it in this manner. So that's basically the Gemara. What the Gemara established there is in calculating Hana, they're actually, ironically, in the opposite direction. The Gemara says that you have to look at the entire picture. You can't look at one act and say, this is permissible by sharp Sula Hamukdashim because Hekdesh will benefit extra. Because if Hekdesh might benefit now, but in the entire animal, it's going to lose on the Basar end, you've gained nothing, and therefore better not to actively do anything that, you know, that is a Bizayon to the Kachim. So the same thing can be said here in the reverse direction as a leniency. Then even though you're benefiting from the Nevaya, Mashem Ashbiach Nevaya, Pogame Bitzel. Is that a question?
Yeah, now the question was, in Temura, if you redeem something else from Hekdesh, you know, not an animal, let's say a house or something, anything else retains some redemption?
No, because it never had Kedusha Sagof.
Because it has to be alive?
It has to be a carbon. It has. Time out. I'm on track. I'm going to stop right there. There are, I think, generally speaking, I would say the following. Kedushas Haguf can be even beyond that of a carbon problem. It has to be something that at the outset is usable either as being made part of the Mikdash or used as a carbon, as part of the Avodah. If I'm Makdish a house, the Hekdesh, what is Hekdesh can do that?
Use
correct.
For it in Hekdesh.
Hekdesh can never really use that house, and it's all its value is for selling. As a general, one of the things that you see is that there are only two things that have no pidyon in Hekdesh. And it has to do with the Kedushas HaGof. One is a behema tamim, a tam which was mukdash as a carbon, not a bamum, and two, klei sharis. But the common denominator of both of them is that they themselves are used in the avodah. Okay. So if we could stop here, it'd be nice. Okay, wonderful. We finished our job, except for, you know, it's not that simple if I told you that the final answer is only the bottom, Daf Mem Tes Amud Aleph. Okay? So now the Gemara has a problem. With the conclusion we've reached now, and the Gemara is not really accurate. It's accurate, but it's not. It's a little misleading. The Gemara says, "Besavar Rabbi Yosi Zevez Agorim is Asur." The Gemara is 100% accurate, but the truth is, as I pointed out, both the Rabbanon and Rabbi Yosi in these two Mishnayos hold Zevez Agorim is Asur. Rabbi Yosi permits in the earlier Mishnah because he says you don't get Hana, and the Chachamim permit on this Mishnah because they say you don't get net Hana is zero. But they all hold Zevez Agorim is Asur. The Gemara says, "Besavar Rabbi Yosi Zevez Agorim Asur." It could have asked about the Rabbanon, but the problem is they have a direct contradiction to Rabbi Yosi. That's why they focus on Rabbi Yosi. So, Besavar, I think, by the way, when I first read this Gemara, I was misled into thinking that the maskan of the Gemara at this point was Rabbi Yosi holds Zevez Agorim is Asur, and the Chacham holds its Mutar. Why? Because of the Gemara's formulation here. But that's not actually accurate. In fact, ironically, the maskan of the Gemara is going to be is the reverse. Rabbi Yosi holds it's really Mutar, they're going to explain away this Mishnah, and the Rabbanan holds it's really Asur. Fine. So why do we think that Rabbi Yosi holds Zevez Agorim is Mutar? Vatanan. Rabbi Yosi Omer, notim yichur shel orla, ve'ein notim egos shel orla, mipnei shupri. If you have an orla tree, the Gemara says you're allowed to take a shoot, a branch from that tree, and plant it elsewhere. But you're not allowed to take a nut, a seed, a walnut from the tree, and plant that, if the nut is orla. Why? Because a yichur is not asur b'hana. When you plant a tree, if you plant, let's say, a woody tree, and its purpose is for lumber, there's no isur of orla. The wood is not considered fruit. Only a fruit-bearing tree, unatatem kol eitz ma'achal, and even a fruit-bearing tree, only va'araltem or laso es pirio, the pre-shelo, only the fruit is asur, not the wood.
But so, if you replant it, does that have orla? Does that orla?
Well, that tree is a new tree.
And it starts orla again.
And the orla cock will start, but there's no prohibition of planting the yich or the shoot, because it's not asur b'ana. It's no different than planting a nut, which was from a tree that is already 5 years old. And it would be the same thing. But the egos itself of orla, you're not allowed to plant. Why? Because that's mamish. That's fruit. That's asur b'ana. Now, how is this a zevez egorim? How is it a zevez egorim? The simple reading right now, if we stopped right here, the simple reading is that you plant, I would say it's us, you're using the asur b'ana mamish itself. You take the walnut, plant it. So it would seem right now, right now as we stand, you know why it's Zevez Agorim? Because how does the tree grow? Well, what are the ingredients we need for a tree? We need water, we need earth, we need a seed. The seed is Asur Pano, it's the Ego Shel Orla. The ground is Mutar, and the water is Mutar too. Therefore, Zevez Agorim is Mutar. That's the way Rashi actually does ultimately understand. Now, that is telling because of a comment that I made a couple of weeks ago, which Tosos goes off on Rashi on this issue. Tosos, what are you talking about? That's not called Zevez Agorim. Zevez Agorim means when both the Isser and the Heter catalyst do the same thing, like the example I gave you of the yeast. But here, the entire seed function is being fulfilled by an Isser Hana. The entire ground function is being filled by Heter. That's not called Zevez Agorim. That's Usser. So hold off 1 second. But the Amar Rav Yehuda, we're not finished yet. The Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Now, firstly, so far, this doesn't anyway prove that Zevez Agorim is Mutar. Why? Because we don't know what happens if you plant the Ego Shel Orla and it grows. When Rabbi Yosi just says, everybody should agree with this, actually. Rabbi Yosi says, you can plant the shoot, you can't plant the fruit. Fine, no problems. But, V'amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, Moda Rabbi Yosi, She'im Nota V'hirvich V'hirkiv, Mutar. V'tanya Nami Hochi, Moda Rabbi Yosi, She'im Nota V'hirvich V'hirkiv, Mutar. Shmuel, apparently, Rav hadn't heard the brisa, so he made the statement on his own. He says that even though Rabbi Yosi says you're not allowed to plant the ego shel orla, he agrees that if you were noteya and hivrich and hirkiv, it is permitted, meaning what grows is permitted. So here's the so now already you can.
So you can't do the planting, but if you did plant it,
then the byproduct is mutter.
That's what you're saying about the ritva. It's like the ritva, because he was also saying it's also to. The actual planting of the Dover
Asur. Well, correct. It should be Asur right now, correct. But once you did it, it's Mutar. That which grows is Mutar. But to do it is Asur, because you're actually being Mishtamish and Isarano right now. So now the question is, what does this line mean, Nata v'hivrach v'hirkiv? So Rashi, let's first look at the bottom Rashi on our Amud. She'im Nata, the last Rashi, the end of the second to last line. She'im Nata ha'ego shel orla Mutar. Period. If I plant the walnut and it grows into a tree, it's mutar. Alma Ki gadel ha'ilan v'toein peros. When the tree grows and bears fruit, havaluhu hanach peros begrama de egos de isur v'karka de heter. Those fruits that eventually grow on this new tree are a byproduct of two causes: the egos of isur and the karka of heter. And Rabbi Yose says, according to Rab and according to the Braisa, mutar. So you see,
that's
Rabbi,
right?
Right. That's how Rashi reads the Gemara.
By the way, this means when you first put the egos in, that's this egos that's usher into the ground.
Yes.
It's going to even say zegorim mutar, but the first 3 years it says din of arlo.
Correct. No, we're only talking about
it's after.
Absolutely, you're actually correct, Sam. 100%. After the 3 years. After 3 years, what grows is mutar. Within the first 3 years, that's a given. Okay.
Now it starts again even with the egos.
Correct. Okay. Correct. The only way to not have a clock restart is when, as we're going to see in a moment, when you graft a younger tree and attach it to an older tree. Okay? And that's not a Zev Zegorim concept. It's a Bittul concept, actually. Now, here's the problem in the Gemara. The problem is, what are these words of v'hivrich v'herkiv here? Laharkiv means to graft. Lahavrich means typically to take a runner, to take a branch from a tree and run it in the ground and bring it up somewhere else.
Like Birkayim from the Berech. It's like,
yes.
It's with bends.
I believe so.
Not detaching it, so it's still attached.
Correct, correct. Still attached. I pull on the ground. I take up one branch, I
eventually
bend it, a vine.
Roots.
Right.
It'll make its own roots.
Okay. So, what? I don't know. I don't understand the agriculture, but apparently you would take a shoot or a runner from one, like a vine or something, and you'd pull it under the ground, bury it in dirt,
so
and bring it up at some other place,
country.
And eventually it becomes a second tree.
Yeah.
I guess the benefit is, I would guess, but I don't know, is that if you have a tree that has worked well, you know, in terms of your breeding and so on, it's an easy way, I guess, of it probably produces another tree faster, and it's going to be the exact same genetic...
You don't
cut it off. No, you're able to. You have a flexible thing and bend it. Yeah, that's lahavrich. Yeah.
You plant it in the ground.
You bury, cover it with dirt, and you pull up a shoot. Right. Okay. And pulls up a shoot in another place. And now.
You leave it like that.
And you leave it like that.
Sort of like the bow in the ground.
Yep.
Then it grows a second tree.
It sticks down roots.
What do we know here in Manhattan?
Well, I was going to say, you learn something new every day.
And what do I know in Teaneck? Okay. You could look at my overgrown backyard. My wife says I need to deal with. Fine. Okay. It's a science experiment. So now let's take... Now the question is, why is Hivrich and Herkiv here? What does it have to do with it? Because you're not Mavrich and Markiv a walnut. A nut. You have to do it with branches. So in other words, if it just said, Umoda Rabbi Yose she'imnata mutar, and we're happy, we're done. But this is where the whole Machlokas Rishonim is going to emerge.
No, but didn't we just say
Notin
and Yichoshal
Erla?
Isn't this like Yichoshal
Erla? No, because the Yichoshal Erla is mutter to be
Notin. I know, but what's wrong about Hivrich and Hirkiv?
No, because...
Aren't you using the branch there?
So listen for a second, Sam. Yeah. The whole point, Rabbi Yosef is being Mechadesh, that if you did Netiyah, or you did Havrach or Akava, and it's usher to do, still the byproduct is mutter.
I understand why branch is usher.
No. It means that which will eventually grow out of those branches will be usher. The whole point for Rabbi Yose is Rabbi Yose is being moda that even though you're not allowed to be nata hivrich and hirkiv, the byproduct is mutter. And therefore, listen one second, therefore he's not talking about yichor shel arla. Because he said yichor shel arla, you're allowed to plant, there's no iser.
Right.
He's talking about something related to an egos in nata, that I understand. But what is the hivrich and hirkiv? That's the whole nekuda that the Rishonim face. So Rashi says, the top Rashi in Mentesa Menala. Rashi says, let me get the correction of the Bach. Dibar Mas v'hivrich v'hirkiv, Rashi says, O hivrich, O hirkiv, yichur shel arla be'ilan zakein. Now, I'm going to explain this in a moment, but first I want to point out the crucial detail in Rashi that the Bach was fixing. Rashi understands that there are three things that you could be doing here, and none of which you're allowed to do, all of which the byproduct of fruits will eventually be mutar, which is nota, o hivrich, o hirkiv. Now, once you say that, I don't even care on some level what hivrich and hirkiv mean. I know that if you were nota, if you just planted the ego shalarla and it grew into a tree, it's mutar. The crucial point is that Tosfos is not going to accept that. Tosfos is going, I don't even spells it out, but he realizes in nota, colon, and then either v'hivrich o hirkif. In other words, Tosus would say that even according to Rabbi Yosei, if you plant an egos straight up and it grows into a tree and it produces fruit, it's usser, period. You know why? That's not called zeviz egorim. Why? Because the seed was all isser. The only way to make it zeviz egorim is if it's nata, colon, first the egos, then you take that the tree, the shoots that grow out of the egos, and you graft it, or you markiv it with, I don't know how the hivrech works, and you make it into a second tree of heter. Then you can talk about zeviz egorim. That's the crucial point. But Rashi says, v'hivrech v'hirkiv, o hivrech, o hirkiv, yichav shel olah be'ilan zokein, mutarm per ser miyad. Now, here's the chiddush. And this was the question one of you asked, I forget, about do you have to wait 3 years? Of course you have to wait 3 years. Rashi says the following. If you're nata, you have to wait 3 years for the fruits of the third year to eat. But if you take, in general, let's say you're not dealing with orla. If I take a new shoot, a new tree that's in its first year, and I graft it onto an old tree, or if I mavrich it, I guess you take a runner and then you attach that to the old tree, it joins with the old tree and all the fruit is mutar.
So there's no orla involved with that at all?
Correct. No. The case I just gave is no orla. In this case, what I did was the following. I planted an egos. It grew, started growing into wood. I now took that wood, it hadn't produced fruits yet, and I grafted it onto the old tree. So it will be mutar, even if it's orla. Even though the tree should be asur mishtan arla, that's mutar. So there are two ways. And what's the benefit? The benefit is I can eat the fruits immediately. If I'm notea, the egos alone on a conception island, I've got to wait 3 years. But if I plant the egos, it starts to sprout wood, and I bind that wood onto another old tree, I can then eat the egos that grow on it immediately. So that's what Rashi says. That again, I'm reading Rashi one time. V'hivrech v'hirkiv, o hivrech, o hirkiv, yichor shel orla be'ilan zaken, mutaren perosehen miyad, afal pishalom malu lahem shnei orla. And he says, the zeviz egorim is mutar. In other words, the old tree, the new tree, that's zeviz egorim. Or in the case when you plant the egos and you don't do any grafting, the egos plus the karka. V'hachinami amrinan bi'alma, we say generally, yaldo shesibcha bezekena betela. If you take a new sapling, there's nothing to do with orla. I mean, it hasn't grown 3 years yet, and you bind it, you graft it onto an old tree, now it produces fruit, you don't have to wait the 3 years. That's the first Lashon Rashi. Now Rashi says Lashon Acher. Im nata ha'ego shel orla, shu isur hana'a. If you plant the egos of orla, it's asur bana'a. Then when it produces a sprout, a sapling, then hivricha v'hirkiva be'ilan. Not that you eat the walnuts from that alone, because that's going to be aser. But first you plant the egos shel orla, which you weren't allowed to do. It now produces a sapling. Now you amavrich and markiv that onto a tree of heter, mutter. The osan peiro shetoein achar zman, those fruits that eventually grow from the sapling, ba'inami ayideya ilan shel heter. They have two sources of nourishment. The ilan of iser, because you planted egos shel orla, and that ilan is absolutely aser, plus the old ilan, that's why the fruits are mutar. So that's how the second interpretation, which is actually how Tosus reads, right, where it's nata, colon. Of course you can't eat the egos and that grow from that sapling alone, but then you take the sapling, v'hivrich o'hirkiv, that's a zeviz egorim. Rashi says, v'kashali, below hivrich below hirkiv nami, ika zeviz egorim, egos the iser, v'karka de heter. Rashi says, I don't understand why you want to read it that way, because even if you just plant the egos alone, you have a zeviz egorim. That's how Rashi explains. Tosus writes the following. Perish Bakuntris, the top Tosus, Belashon Acharon, the second Lashon, Nata Egos, the Acharka Kishanas and Itia, Hivrich Behirkab Ilan, Shel Heter, the Oso Lashon, Tosus says is Ikar, that's the correct Lashon. Umashi Hik Shabakuntris, Afil Lo Hivrich Behirkiv Nami, Rashi's question at the end, that even if you don't do the Havrach and Arkava, it still Zev Zegorim, Lo Dok, he wasn't careful. De Ein Nikra Zev Zegorim, El Kishishnehem, Me Inyan Echad, Kimo havrachas iser ilan heter sheshneim ilan. It's only called zeviz egorim if it is performs the same function, like grafting the tree of orla into a regular tree. Now they both contribute to the fruit. Or uchemo zevel nevaya v'karka deleel, like the zevel, the leaves that fall off onto the ground, and the ground, they both do the same thing. They both provide the nutrients for the produce. Adol egos v'karka shnei inyanim heim. Period. That's what Tosa says. Very, very important machlokas halacha lemaisa. I'm pretty sure the poskim hold like Tosos. I think most Rishonim, and I'm not saying this to counteract that. I don't know. I haven't looked to see how the Shulchan Aruch paskins on this. If it does somewhere, there's no simon in the Shulchan Aruch on Zev Zegarim. I'm sure it just comes up when they quote the various dinim that it has that it's relevant to. But the Ritva points that I think Tosos is wrong. And if you think about it. The Gemara, we have to get to the end to see why. The Ritva insists, it's a Davar Pashat reading the Gemara, that Zev Zagoyim don't have to be the same function. We'll have to explain why in the end. I can't tell you that until you get the Maskana of the Gemara. Okay, we'll see. Fine. So now, we're gonna read just one more question of the Gemara, and we'll stop with that. So the question right now the Gemara has is, what does Rabbi Yosei hold by Orla? Zev Zagorim is Mutter. What does he hold in our Mishnah? Zev Zagorim is Aser. Now there's an obvious answer which the Gemara immediately proposes. V'chitema shani leil Rabbi Yosei bein shari surim lavodas kochavim. Maybe Rabbi Yosei is more machmir by Avodah Zarah than by other Yisurim. Now the truth is, it's a very strange, to my mind, a very unusual statement to make. Because if in fact that is true, what does that imply about Zev Zagorim by Avodah Zarah at least?
In general, yeah.
What is it, if you say it's Asa by Avodah Zarah but Mutta by other Yisuri Hana, I would say that the simple reading would be it's only Asa mid the Rabbanan. And we talk about the chumra of Avodah Zarah in these cases. So, you know, if Yisuri Hana or Yisuri Hana, if that's called Hana in Zev Zagorim, it should be Asur across the board. So, anyway, the Gemara says, lest you want to say that that's the difference. Umi Shanile, is that really true? V'hatanya. Sadashin is Dabla Bezevel Akum. V'chein Parashin is Patma Bekarshine Akum. So if you want to, if there is a brisa that says that if you have a field that you fertilize with zevel shel avodah zarah, let's say you had a calf that was dedicated to avodah zarah and it was added pasture and it was fertilized in the field, or a para which you fattened up with karshine avodah kacharim, karshinim are something called vetch. It's a kind of legume that generally was only eaten by animals, was only eaten by people b'shas atchak when there really was no food. So if you fatten up the animals with karshine avodah zarah, tanicha, the one brisa taught, sadeti zarah parati shachet. You can plant that field, you can shech the cow and eat it. And then v'tanya idach, there was another brisa, sadet tavur upara teraze. You have to let the field lie fallow for a while until the benefits of the fertilization will be lost. And you have to let the cow, you have to not starve it, but let it, you know, reverts to not being fat anymore, so you don't get benefit at all. Even though it's a Zev Zagorim. So my lav, HaRab Yosef, HaRabbanan. Now, what you see from this is that there is a position that holds Zev Zagorim is Mutar Bavo Dezar. Right? Up until this point, we had two Mishnayis. The way the Gemara parsed the Mishnayis on the previous Amud was that everybody holds Zev Zagorim is Asar. Rabbi Yosef believed there's no Hana in the earlier Mishnah. The Chachamim believe there's no net Hanan or Mishnah. But then the problem is Rabbi Yosei holds that Zev Zagorim is Mutar by Orla. And lest you want to say that Rabbi Yosei, that by Avodah Zarah, Rabbi Yosei would agree it's Aser with the Chachamim. By Orla he disagrees. There's somebody by Avodah Zarah who holds that Zev Zagorim is Mutar. It's not the Chachamim in our Mishnah or in the earlier Mishnah. So who is it then? Must be Rabbi Yosei, which means Rabbi Yosei doesn't distinguish between Orla and Avodah Zarah. That's where the Gemara leaves it at this point. I'm going to stop now. Bezras Hashem, next week we will try to complete the sugya, but I think we've sort of set it up pretty well that we should be able to finish, and we get to a surprise at the end of the Gemara about Rabbi Yosei.
Is this thing about the para, for example, you fatten him up and then he gets skinny again, isn't that like the case we just, that's similar to the case of Tamura? We said, okay, so there's no net, there's no benefit, right?
No, because here, when the animal fattened up, it was fed multiple things.
So
right?
At that point, you can't.
So it's Zev Zagorim, right? Now, once you let it put it on a diet and it gets skinny again, the benefit is gone. In other words, the benefit from Karshinim, you know, that Hana has gone and passed. I presume also, although this is harder to tell, I guess I don't know how you fatten animals. If you feed it for another month and you just keep feeding it regular karshinim, presumably the benefit of the original karshinim are gone, right? But I think it's the same thing as teirazin. Okay. All right.
Sure.